Okay, Lloyd. Aspen it is. You better not be fooled. Okay. Yes, let it out. Have a good cry. Come on. Okay, that's enough.
Good morning, Hope Ames. My name is Danny Householder. I'm a pastor here. I'm so glad to be worshiping with you today. If you're keeping score, that is two Dumb and Dumber references in the last month. I'll put it to rest. But I thought that was a good one for today. Because the reality is every single one of us, at a certain point, we're going to cry. Not just because if you've lived as a baby before, which I guess we all have. But the reality is eventually, like even into adulthood, you're going to cry. You're going to cry. You can suppress the emotions all you want. But the reality is even when you bury emotions, they don't die. The longer that you keep them buried, sometimes the more menacing they come back to life. Anybody with me on that? Sometimes it's like it sneaks up on you, doesn't it? You know, like you're just having a normal day. You feel a tap on the shoulder. You turn around. It's the entire world just saying, you're going to cry today. That's it, right? I remember when I was 12 or 13 years old, where I was having a massive crying attack, right? Like I couldn't stop. I was young enough to where I still cried a lot, but old enough to where I really didn't want people to see me. And I don't know what it was that was making me cry that day, but I was in my parents' basement, and all of a sudden I got this thought. I wonder what I look like. Do you ever stand in front of a mirror when you're bawling your eyes out? I mean, you are really crying. I mean, I could not believe what I was seeing in the mirror. These fluids were coming out of my face that I didn't even know existed. And I was fascinated by it. I'm trying new voices, but I am starting to cry harder. You know what I mean? Like, we all cry. I'm starting this sermon out on a light note intentionally because we're talking about some pretty heavy stuff. And I'm using those lighter noted things to point out that, yeah, like eventually every single one of us runs into grief. And sometimes it's small stuff, but sometimes it's big stuff. And what do? Do you suppress it? The Bible describes what it's like sometimes to suppress it. This is from Proverbs chapter 14. It says, laughter can conceal a heavy heart, but when the laughter ends, the grief remains. Anybody know what that feels like? You have genuinely good experiences with people. You're laughing, you're living, you're loving, all those different things. You're making memories, but then you're by yourself again. And sadness creeps in. You're reminded of your grief. And next thing you know, your eyes are flooded with tears, or maybe you're just dry with despair. And it hurts. You can't escape it. Human beings, we are really good at burying these emotions for a while. We're really good at masking them, but they are still there. I want you to know this. As people of faith, we do not have to be people who mask our emotions. We don't have to suppress these emotions. I'm also not telling you today that no matter what you're feeling, you should go out and tell every single person in the world. If you have a wound that's hurting and it's still bleeding, you probably should take it to a doctor, right? Now, in the same way, you don't want to ask every single person in your life to be your therapist. But it's important that when you have these feelings and you have these experiences, you don't keep them buried. And at a certain point, maybe it's time to share them. As Christians, we're encouraged to express our emotions. We're not called to bury these things. Just look at our leader, Jesus. There are many instances in the Bible where Jesus expresses his emotions. He's a very emotional man. Have you noticed this? It says this in Luke chapter 19, when Jesus is approaching the city of Jerusalem. It says, but as he came closer to Jerusalem, he saw the city ahead, and Jesus began to weep. In Hebrews chapter 5 on the far right of the screen here, it's really tragically beautiful. It says, while Jesus was here on earth, he offered prayers and pleadings with a loud cry and tears to the one who could rescue him from death. Jesus did not suppress emotions. And then from our Bible reading this morning, the shortest verse in the Bible, John chapter 11, verse 35, Jesus wept. Now, this is a standout verse, not just because it's the easiest verse in the Bible for you to memorize, and you should do it, right? Memorize it right now. Go tell your friends, I have memorized scripture. I could recite it for you, and you'd feel great about it. But it also stands out because God himself cries. God, this God who's put on flesh, would join us in our grief. Jesus doesn't suppress his emotions, but rather he welcomes grief into his life. And in welcoming grief into his life, he relates to us and ours. He touches us with his love by joining us in our grief. Now, the cool thing about it is we are called to share his love. So as people who encounter grief, but also are filled with the love of God, we don't have to be afraid about sharing these experiences. Rather, in the same way that God has healed us in our grief, or at least met us in our grief, we could share the love of God by meeting somebody else in theirs. It's part of what we've been considering as we're doing the series called Hope Stories. This is our third week of Hope Stories, where people in this congregation are sharing their real life stories, and they're just like you. They're just like me. They're sharing stories about what it's like to walk through this world as a person of faith, like real life situations. What's that like? And today I'm really excited because my friends Sarah and Stephen are sharing their story with you today. They've experienced great tragedy in their life. Don't get me wrong, like they're really cheerful people. You know what I mean? Like they make great memories. They laugh. They'll say hi to you. They're so welcoming. They're really, really awesome people. But they've also endured great tragedy throughout their life. These two, they've been around Hope Ames since the very beginning of Hope Ames. They were here before I was here, back when Hope Ames was a local site. At Hope, a local site is just when a group of people are gathering together and watching the service online. And so we gave them a name. They're a local site. And that was happening in Ames. And Sarah and Stephen, they were a part of it. They, along with a few other dozen people in this congregation, they're the whole reason why like 600 people gather here in the auditorium between our two services every Sunday morning. They're part of the reason why another 300, 350 college students gather in the Link every Wednesday night. Like, they're a part of this. And they've also encountered some deep grief throughout this story, too. And I'd like for you to hear from them. When Hope Ames was just starting, the tragedy they experienced was Sarah was far into pregnancy, and they lost their child. They are one in four couples who experiences pregnancy loss. And I'm telling you that because I am sure that there are people in this room who have experienced that. And so I do want to give you the heads up. But whether that's you or you're just a person who's experienced loss or you're experiencing grief in another way, I encourage you to listen to this story. See how God shows up in their life and see how your story might relate to theirs and see how God might come into your story too. It's amazing how God can move through our moments of grief because God, he doesn't suppress grief, he embraces it. He goes into these places to meet us where we are, just like he has for Sarah and Stephen. Take a look.
I'm Sarah Walter.
My name's Stephen Walter. In 2016, ran into a couple from our small group in college and down at Hope West Des Moines. And they told us about an opportunity to join in on the start of a Hope local site here up in Ames.
So we moved here in July of 2016. Started attending Hope Local Ames. Later on in 2016, we found out we were pregnant with our second child. And then later on, you know, around 20 weeks, we found out that we were having a boy. And I guess that's kind of where our true story begins. I woke up on a Saturday, so that would have been April 29th, and I would have been 34 weeks pregnant. And something just felt off. So we decided to go into Mary Greeley, and that's when you hear the absolutely worst noise ever, which is silence. I remember when we were waiting for the physician, I just remember praying to God to let some sort of miracle happen, let something change when this doctor comes in. And when he came in, he confirmed that there was no heartbeat. From there, I counted the ceiling tiles because that's all I could look at. I mean, I remember thinking, like, what is it going to be like when he's born? I remember just saying, can something happen differently once he is? But nothing changed.
So April 30th, he was born. We got to spend about 12 hours with him in the room. Holding him, we even took a nap with him and just enjoyed the time with him.
We had Leo and Ben, I think was the other name. But ultimately chose Leo because that's what I liked more, I think.
During that time, we had a member of our Hope Local site come and visit us and actually baptize Leo. And that was just a true blessing for us. From there, we moved forward with planning something we never thought we'd have to, and that was the funeral of a small baby.
I remember Mark asking about food for afterwards, you know, to provide a lunch for after the funeral and everything. And I said, oh, I don't think we'll need that much. He's like, no, I think there's going to be a lot of people that will show up to this. I think there's going to be a lot of people from Hope that will show up. And I mean, he was right. It was just crazy the amount of people that would show up to a funeral of someone that hadn't even lived a life yet. And then we just tried to figure out how life goes on from there. So one way, I guess, that hope helped us was by putting together a meal train to bring us food. We asked that people eat with us or invite us to their home if they felt comfortable doing so, because we wanted to get to know everyone on a personal level. We wanted to feel normal. And what's more normal than sitting around a table with people and talking?
It's the normal stuff that helps people through their grief. Sitting with one another at a table. This is what we're called to do as Christians, and this is fundamental. This is foundational to what's been a part of making Hope Ames a special congregation throughout the years. See, when I moved to Ames in 2017, it was just a little bit after Sarah and Stephen lost Leo. When I walked in, I saw this group for the first time. We're meeting over at what is The Link now, but it was formerly called Zeke's. And when I walked in, I saw a group of people that were united. I mean, deeply unified. So tightly knit. And I think it's because of what they had experienced together. It was a small, little group of people. And they knew Sarah, and they knew Stephen, and they loved them. And then they heard about this incredible tragedy. But they came together through it. And then just a few weeks later, somebody else who was really instrumental in getting Hope Ames off the ground, his name was Gary, he passed away of cancer. And again, they were together on it. They were there for Gary's wife, Chris. They continue to be there for Gary's wife, Chris. This group of people, they're incredible. And sure, they've branched out. Many of you are friends with them now. But I'm actually blown away even today when I find out when Stephen and Sarah have told me things like, yeah, well, those people, we actually didn't really know for very long before you had moved here. We only maybe knew him for about a month before we met you, and I'm just shocked because by the time that I showed up, I'm like, these people are inseparable because they had shown up for one another in these normal, simple places. Oftentimes, people get really worked up about, oh, how could I show up for somebody? What am I supposed to say when someone is hurting, they're going through grief, they've lost someone close to them? I've learned this in my 7 years of pastoral care. People almost never remember what I say, but they remember when someone shows up for them. People are not looking for a perfect response. They're looking for a relationship, someone who would sit down with them, share a meal with them in the normal places. As Christians, this is what we're called to do. Now, I know that it's easy for us to look at this and be like, okay, well, of course, the Christian, you're going to say this in church, right? Go out and be with people who are hurting. But this kind of knocks on the door at one of the most difficult parts of our faith too, doesn't it? I'll acknowledge this. For me, this is one of the most painful parts of our faith. I know that as Christians, we're called to join each other in our grief. But hold on. As people, we're supposed to join each other in our grief. But aren't we like worshiping this God who has the ability to have power over everything in the world? This really bothers me. And I've really struggled with this question before. Okay, God, you're sending people into my life. You're sending me into people's lives. And we're supposed to join with one another in our stories of grief so we can be there. And we can have these normal experiences that remind us, hey, it's not over yet. But what about you? Where are you? What's Jesus up to when I'm struggling, when I'm suffering, when my loved one is sick? Where are you? What are you doing? And in the story that we read today, just preceding it, it's one of the most famous stories that Jesus is a part of in the Bible stories. It comes from John chapter 11. This comes just a little bit before our Bible reading for today. Jesus has heard about his friend Lazarus. His friend Lazarus is not doing well. He's very sick. Now, Lazarus wasn't just some person to Jesus, and nobody is just some person to Jesus, but in the gospel account, according to John, oh my goodness, Jesus deeply cared for Lazarus. Jesus had his disciples, he had his close disciples, and he also had these three best friends, Lazarus, Mary, Martha, their three siblings. And so somebody comes up to Jesus and they say, your dear and close friend, Lord, your dear friend is very sick, it's Lazarus. And what does Jesus do? Although Jesus loved Martha, Mary, and Lazarus, he stayed where he was for the next 2 days. Look, I'm confident of this. I'm confident that God doesn't play games with us, but I'm also confident of this. God's ways are not my ways. God's timing is not my timing, because if I was God, I don't think I'd do it this way, right? And of course, it's a good thing I'm not God, but my goodness, as a human being with the way that I can comprehend grief in this world, this is frustrating for me. What are you doing when it feels like you're doing nothing at all? Jesus doesn't send out a message back to the family and say, hey, we're on our way. He's not even making preparations for the journey back. See, Lazarus, he was living in Judea, and Jesus and his disciples, they were now in Bethany. They were in Bethany because when Jesus was in Judea, he and his disciples were starting to make a scene. In John chapter 10, Jesus had claimed to be God, and he's been doing all these incredible teachings. People are starting to follow him, and he's also demonstrating his power by revealing these incredible miracles. And so the religious establishment, they pick up stones, they're getting ready to kill him, and they tell him, you, a mere man, claim to be God. That's blasphemy. You can't do that. And so Jesus and the disciples, they flee. They're out of Judea. Jesus is Judea's most wanted. So you read the story, you're like, well, I mean, I guess it's kind of reasonable why Jesus and his disciples wouldn't be eager to go back to Judea. So it seems like Jesus is serving some people for convenience, but not Mary and Martha, the people who really need him. And sometimes that's what it feels like in the walk of faith. I think you're serving other people, but what about me and my grief right now? Hold on a second. Jesus is not here to make us comfortable, even the people that it looks like he's making comfortable. Because go ahead, follow this story just a little bit longer. Just after it's clear that Lazarus is dead, Jesus finally speaks up, and Jesus says, all right, let's go back to Judea. And of course, his disciples are like, wait a second. Like, we're out here, we're safe in Bethany. Judea is where you're most wanted. Judea is where we'll all die. And so they say back to him, Rabbi, only a few days ago, the people in Judea were trying to stone you. Jesus understands what's at risk here. He knows if he goes back to Judea, he is voluntarily walking into the mouth of death. And there is no way out. If he goes back and he keeps acting like God, if he does for Lazarus what he knows he needs to do for Lazarus to be healed, for Lazarus to live, he knows there's no way out. He is walking voluntarily into the jaws of death. What is he doing? Why is he doing this? So, I mean, my goodness, if you're Mary and you're Martha, you're like, your timing didn't work out for me. He's already dead. If you're a disciple of Jesus, you're like, come on, can't we catch a break anywhere? I mean, we're wanted there too. This isn't going to be good. But Jesus reveals something really cool here and why he's going back. It sounds cryptic and like a code at first, but take a look. It's amazing what Jesus says here. Jesus talks about daylight and he talks about nighttime. He says there are 12 hours of daylight every day. During the day, people can walk safely. They can see because they have the light of this world. But at night, there's the danger of stumbling. Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but now I will go and wake him up. And look, don't get me wrong. I understand that sometimes people are like, this is where Christianity loses me. Jesus was nuts, right? He's walking voluntarily back into death right now, and he's talking about waking up a dead man. It's disrespectful at the very least. But look at what he's doing. And it's shown what he's doing through the surprising response of a familiar character. See, one of his disciples, his name is Thomas, and you probably know him as Doubting Thomas. This is how Thomas has been known throughout the years, because he doubted Jesus after Jesus' resurrection. But Thomas was a man who tried. He wanted to follow Jesus, even when Jesus' words weren't making a whole lot of sense. So Thomas responds to Jesus by saying this, all right, let's go to and die with Jesus. Like, it sounds kind of funny at first, doesn't it? I mean, it sounds like he's surrendering. Sounds like these disciples are nuts. They're just as crazy as their leader. What's wrong with them? But hold on. I think what Jesus is saying here, and I think what Thomas is acknowledging, is Jesus is saying, I am going to walk you through some difficult places in life. And it's going to feel like midnight. But him, as the light of the world, and John calls him the light of the world that will never be extinguished by the darkness in the beginning of his gospel account. In John chapter 1, verse 5, as the light of the world, walking with Jesus through midnight is better than walking through the sun on a high noon, bright, sunshiny day. The brightest of days. You catch what I'm saying here. And I think that's what Thomas is agreeing with. Look, I don't know what you're saying completely, but I know enough. And maybe in your walk with Jesus, you're kind of there sometimes. I have no clue what you're saying to me right now, but everything you've shown me about you is good. I mean, what you have shown me about you. Not necessarily what sometimes I think about you, not necessarily what I've been told about you, but what you have shown me about you is good. What you have shown me about you is light. What you have shown me about you is truth. So Jesus, even if it's the middle of the night, walking with you is better than walking through high noon on a sunny day. And it's not making sense yet. I don't expect it to. But maybe it's starting to spark some hope. Because this seemingly crazy man walking back into the mouth of death, at the very least, we know this about him. To Jesus, funerals aren't final. Whether he's right or wrong, he's clearly convinced of this. Funerals are not final. And he's convinced of this even as he enters the scene. Let me just walk you through some of this dialogue that takes place as Jesus shows up. What would you want Jesus to say to you? I mean, when you're really mad at him, right? When you prayed for so long for someone to be healed, you prayed for so long for this thing in your life to go away, and it's just not happening. And here comes Jesus when it's after the fact. It feels like the fight's over, like death is won, here's the funeral, done. What would you expect him to say? Jesus shows up and he meets Lazarus' sister named Martha. Martha says to him, Lord, if only you had been here, my brother would not have died. Have you ever said if only types of things to God? Maybe you just said if only types of things to yourself. Like, oh man, if only I wouldn't have spoken out. If only I would have kept quieter. Oh, if only I would have applied for that job. If only I wouldn't have left that relationship. Oh, if only I wouldn't have messed up. Oh, if only my family was still together. If only fill in the blank. Then I would finally be happy. Something. It's like this feeling of nostalgia, right? It's that bittersweet feeling. It's a nice little memory, but then it makes you sad when you realize that these memories are no more. If only that could happen. And Jesus responds to her. It's pretty cool. He says, I'm the resurrection and the life. Anyone who believes in me will live even after dying. So do you believe this, Martha? Now, maybe this is what you would expect Jesus to say. Maybe this is what you would expect a Christian to say. Christians should walk into funerals and say, why are you sad, right? I mean, don't you know Jesus is the resurrection and the life? This isn't the end of it. And for some people, this is what they need to hear. Jesus is replacing the only on her if only with if Jesus, right? Like, if Jesus really is who you're starting to believe that he is, that person who you're starting to have a feeling about, even though you don't fully understand, but if Jesus is who you're starting to believe that he is, things could turn around. If Jesus really is the Messiah, I might have hope here. If Jesus really is this new life, this new resurrection, if Jesus really is God become flesh, here to meet us in our grief so that it wouldn't be the final say, maybe there's a chance. Jesus says, so do you believe this, Martha? What's he doing? He's basically giving her like a pep talk for her faith. And maybe that's what you need today. Maybe in your moments of grief, you've had a few where you're like, I'm ready for a pep talk. I'm ready to be encouraged. I'm ready to be nudged forward. And Jesus can do that for you. But just be careful, because don't think that every single person needs to receive this. For those who need a ministry of truth, Jesus gives the truth. And maybe there's someone in your life, when they're experiencing grief, they need the truth. And they're asking for it, and they're ready for it. But then there are many of us who need something else. Because Jesus then goes to Martha's sister, Mary, the other sister of Lazarus, and she says the exact same thing to Jesus. Lord, if only you had been here, my brother would not have died. And what does Jesus say to her? Does he spew Bible verses out at her? No. He just responds. Where have you put him? They tell him, come and see. And it just says Jesus wept. To Martha, he gives this incredible pep talk, but to Mary, he just gives the cosmic shoulders of the universe for her to cry on. He'll do that for you too. Maybe you're thinking, if I'm going to help someone in grief, I've got to tell them the truth. Come on, don't be sad. Look at your Savior. I have many moments, and maybe you've been in a care situation with me before, I'm like, do I give you truth or do I give you tears right now? We struggle with that. But Jesus, he knows. He knows because he sees what's really going on, and that's important. Because that's what the disciples, that's what the people who are mourning are asking Jesus to do. They say it right there, come and see. Now, John is really specific about when he uses this phrase, come and see. If you think back to John chapter 1, if you've read it before. In John chapter 1, Jesus is calling his disciples. And they're like, hey, where are you staying? Can we follow you? And Jesus says, come and see. It's as if he's saying, I invite you to live this life with me. I want you to live this life with me. But I could not possibly put it into words how incredible and glorious it is. Sure, through the highs and the lows, there's no doubt about it, but I could not possibly describe to you with words what it is. You just have to come and see. So just come and see. Come and see the glory. Come and see the greatness. Come and see how amazing it is. Now, here at the funeral, Jesus isn't saying come and see, but rather people who love him, people who wanted him to perform a miracle here, they're saying, Jesus, come and see, because I don't have words to put on my grief right now. It's awful. I can't explain to you how bad this is. You're just going to have to come and see it. And what does that do to Jesus? What does that do to God in the flesh? It makes him cry. He's heartbroken over this. That we would experience anything in this world that's so painful that we wouldn't have words for it. And here's the truth. Jesus is the same God talking to Martha and Mary, but the unchanging God is whoever you need him to be. He doesn't change, right? He is God, but he is who you need him to be. And if you need a pep talk, he'll give that to you. And if you just need cosmic shoulders to cry on, he's here. The unchanging God is whoever you need him to be. The unchanging God has been whoever the Walters have needed him to be. They hung in there with him. Certainly not easy. But keep listening to their story here. See how God shows up, and he is who they need him to be.
This year on April 30th, he would have been turning 7 years old. So each year we go and we go down and visit his earthly body at the cemetery in Ankeny. And we go and we take a pizza and a cake and our kids, and we just sit there and enjoy some time with him the best we can.
You learn to see things in life that help you remember. One time I was at a therapy appointment, and right before I went in on the radio, one of the songs that we played at his funeral came on. I mean, I'll take pictures of our kids, and there'll be like these random rainbows in the picture. So that's always comforting. I sometimes feel like Leo's death prepared me for the birth of our twins. They were born at 33 weeks and a day. 34 weeks is always hard. I mean, with our other kids, it was always a challenging week to get through. And I just remember after they were born, and once I heard them both cry, I just remember feeling just a sense of relief. I mean, I don't remember feeling overwhelmed. And I know that can be a very overwhelming situation for parents. I mean, I definitely went through a phase of being angry. Why'd you let this happen? I did therapy, I took medication. So I just made sure I got up. I took care of May. We went to different places. You know, we made sure we kept attending church. Got involved in a life group. Some of the people in our life group at that time didn't have the same experience as us, but it's also crazy because when you do open up and people are willing to share with you that they too have suffered a loss similar to that, then that's, I mean, to me, that's God's hands guiding you to those people.
I just felt a comfort. I felt knowing that he was in heaven. It was a good place for him.
Yeah. I find myself just being a little sadder starting around Thanksgiving until about Mother's Day. Well, it's because you just think about what he misses out on.
Easter.
And then Easter is, I mean, the dislike is that I know Easter's coming and then shortly after that, it'll just be the anniversary. But then at the same time, it's because of what happened at Easter time. We will be able to go to heaven and see everyone that we've lost. But then I can finally just spend time with him. And so I look forward to that day. You know, I make the most of my time here with who's here, like with our kids. And I don't wish that time away, but I do look forward to holding him again. It's good in a way to see people that are willing to talk about it. because then you don't feel so alone. Because that's, I think, what makes it really hard to get through, is when you feel isolated. So that's why we were willing to tell ours.
And I'm so glad that they have shared their story. I'm so grateful. And would you give God praise for Sarah and Steven? They're really awesome. The unchanging God has been who they needed him to be. And it doesn't mean that the circumstances are easy, but he shows up for them. He shows up for them. Sometimes in the huge ways, and he most certainly will deliver so that Sarah's vision of holding Leo again, it will come true. But this God that we trust for eternity, we also just get to trust for today, right? Trust him on these big, incredible visions that we get about the future, but then also like those little signs. He says, I showed up to you through something that showed up in a picture. I'm showing up for you in the way that there are people around you who can relate to this story. I'm there with you. And he can provide to you what you need. He can provide to you what you need, and he can take care of what we cannot face. Because please know this, Jesus is crying in this scene, but he's not weak. He's not defeated, and he has not failed. Why is he crying? I mean, this is beautiful, isn't it? Why is he crying? Look at the emotions of Jesus. Look what's coming out of him. John chapter 11, it's really interesting how Jesus, God in the flesh, is described here. A deep anger welled up within him. He was deeply troubled. Now it says he's on the way to the tomb. Jesus was still angry as he arrived at the tomb. He still has tears in his eyes. It says this. It's clear to us. Crying, he's furious. Crying, he's bellowing with anger. And there's something really interesting about this way that John uses anger. There are other words that John could have used to say that he was frustrated, to say that he was mad. But there's only one other time in the New Testament that this word for anger is used. And it is used to describe an untamed, raging, out of control animal. And this is how John decides to describe God in the flesh approaching a tomb at a funeral. He's furious. He's bellowing with anger. Who's he mad at? With tears in his eyes, fuming, who's he mad at? He can't possibly be mad at those who are mourning. He's not telling them, get over your sadness, otherwise he wouldn't be crying with them. Sometimes in our sadness, we're mad at God, but he's not mad at himself, is he? Otherwise he wouldn't be crying, which means what? He didn't intend this. He didn't want death. He never sent this. This is not what God intended for. Who's he angry at? Who's he freaking out at on the way to the tomb? The one thing that tries to threaten our bond with him. It's death. Jesus is crying, but he is not weak. He is not failing. He is not defeated. He is walking toward the tomb like a heavyweight boxer in a title fight. And you can almost hear the dialogue between him and death. Death saying, come on, have it at me. You know what you did, Jesus, coming back here, don't you? You walked into Judea. This is the mouth of death. If you do what you think you're going to do right now, you'll never walk out. You're signing your death warrant. And Jesus keeps going forward. He won't stop. He's dedicated to this. He won't move. He's furious at anything that would threaten his bond, his love, his relationship with you. The tomb is saying to him, if you raise Lazarus, I'll kill you. And Jesus says, bring it. Come on, bring it. It makes me think of Leo, you know? Because death picked a fight with Leo. Death met God. Who do you think won? How dare you go after the vulnerable? How dare you go after his children? Death picked a fight with humanity and met God. Who wins? He will not lose. He's not afraid. He already knows the outcome. He knows the outcome. Do you see this in the story? There's something really unique about this miracle from Jesus. Oftentimes when Jesus performs a miracle, he says something like, all right, now let this happen, right? He says to the storms, peace be still, and they get still. But here, Jesus knows the outcome. He walks up to the tomb, and what does he say? He doesn't say, all right, now it's going to happen. I believe it. And I'm going to do a couple things. And here we go. No, he walks up to the tomb. And do you see what he says? He says, Father, thank you for hearing me. What's he been up to, right? I think about the moments where my life is flooded with tears. I think about the moments when my heart is dry in despair. And I'm screaming at God, what are you doing? What was he doing? In the 2 days in Bethany, when it felt like he was doing nothing, what was he doing? He was talking to his father about Lazarus. He was making sure that the funeral wouldn't be final. He would put an end to this funeral only to start the processional for his. He gets there and he says, Father, thank you for hearing me. What's he been up to? He didn't forget Lazarus. One of the hardest parts about losing somebody is time continues and it feels like the world doesn't stop. And you start to wonder if anybody remembers anymore. My grandfather, he died 20 years ago this past week. And man, I just live for the moments when somebody tells me, do you know what he did? I was in college and I was interviewing the mayor of Waverly, of all people. He said, your last name's Householder. And I was just getting ready for him to say, you're Mike's kid, right? He's like, you're related to Tom? I was like, yeah, that's my grandpa. He said, ah, he was my pastor in Chicago. And I'll never forget when he stood up to the neighborhood because a family of color had moved in and the whole church threatened to fire him if he let him live in the house that the church owned. And I remember hearing that just being like, oh man, somebody remembers, right? Jesus hasn't forgotten. I've got my hymnal here, and I use it every single time that we have a baptism. And when I started, I was pretty young doing this job, and I was trying to figure out a way to kind of deal with some of the pain that you see families go through when they lose someone that they weren't supposed to lose. And so I started writing down names of kids that we never got to meet in this church family. And so I write their names in here so that every time that we baptize somebody new, I remember that Jesus hasn't forgotten these. And at the top of the list here, it was the first one, Leo. It's right here. And it hit me when we were interviewing Sarah and Stephen this week. I had never shown them this. I'd never told them. And sometimes the best thing you can do for someone who's experienced grief or loss is just remind them, hey, Jesus has never stopped thinking about you. And you can remind him by telling him this, I haven't forgotten. He's still showing up because he's showing up through you. And he performs the miracle. He does the incredible thing and the crowd goes wild, right? The heavyweight fight, God won. And in this incredible chaotic fight, I just imagine Jesus in the middle of a big and loud crowd. They just saw a dead man walk out of a tomb. And as Jesus shines his light into this funeral, I wonder if for a moment it sunk in that the jaws of death had closed on him. He ended this funeral by planning his own. Tells us this at the end of John chapter 11. It says, so from that time on, the Jewish leaders began to plot Jesus' death. But he hung in there and keeps inviting you, keeps on saying, no, come on, there's more. I won't stop. It's Jesus, he wins that fight with death and he raises from the dead. And you know what's really cool? Jesus had been telling people for a long time, come and see, you won't believe how amazing it is. And people had been telling Jesus, come and see, you won't imagine what I'm living through. But after Jesus has risen from the dead, it's not like there's any more sights to see. He's like, no. You don't have to come and see anymore. Instead, you get to come and be fed. Really, he rises from the dead. His disciples find him. And Jesus says this to them, now come and have some breakfast. I'm here to feed you. What's more normal than people sharing a meal? I don't know what we're going to say to each other in heaven, but I know we'll be together. And that's what we really want, isn't it? And I know it won't be there. Because in, let's say, the second to last page of the Bible, the second to last chapter of the Bible, the scriptures tell us this, he, Jesus, will wipe away every tear from their eyes. And there will be no more death or sorrow or pain. All these things will be gone forever. He won. And all the sadness will be gone forever, but he will return to you everything in full that you've lost. He loves you way too much to replace what you've lost. He will not replace those you've lost. He will return them to you in full, resurrected, perfected, whole, new, alive. Because death picked a fight with humanity and met God. God won. So Leo wins, so you win. So go ahead and cry. But remember, it won't last forever because he's won. Amen.